Accession number 20593, Reel 2.
Robin Knapp in Reel 2.
The mules, they were looked after well and truly. We idolized those animals. I known that you go down to breakfast and that in the morning, and the mules would be in the company lines, and you could hear those animals hollering, calling out. And they used to, boys used to come back, and they have different things for them, plate of porridge and all this sort of thing. They used to, they'd give them anything. And those animals, they were looked after like children.
How many mules would you personally be looking after?
The British on the rank only looked after one. One animal per person. But the Indians used to have perhaps two or three.
Why was that?
I don't know. But you'd always see them. But ourselves, we only had one animal per person. And to be honest, when you're a muleteer, my way of thinking, you've got a lot of responsibility. Because it's not only yourself you've got to look after. You've got to look after the animal and whatever you're carrying. Because I used to carry the 3-inch mortar. But you couldn't afford to lose anything like that. It wasn't just looking after your rifle and ammunition. You had to look after another piece of equipment, plus your animal. Whenever you stopped or whenever it came to, the animal always came first. You fed and brushed your animal before yourself.
Did your mule have a name?
Yes, funny. I called her Olive. But she was quite a good animal to me.
Was it a noisy animal?
No. Very, very quiet animal. The only thing I was unable to do all the time I had her was to ride the animal. That's one thing. Every time I went to try and get on her, she threw me off.
Did she suffer from any complaints or diseases?
Who, myself?
No, Olive.
No, we did have one episode with her. What, two actually. One of them, she had what they call a girth gall, which is something caused by the girth that goes underneath the stomach to hold the saddle down. And I couldn't use her. We took her until that had disappeared. But other than that, one other thing she ate, and I lost her. She went back to remount. She'd eaten some type of grass or something, and she had something up inside of her stomach that we were unable to extract out. We tried, but was unable to. And in the end, we had to put her back on a lorry and send her back to remount, which I do know that the animal was back in the line again, and I asked if I could have her back, and they said sorry, and I had another animal at the time.
Who was that?
Well, it was just another animal to me, you know, I mean, another mule, I just took it. It was an order to take that animal, so I just had another one.
What was this animal like compared with Olive?
Well, Not too bad, but you get attached to one animal, you know, I mean. But I treated that one just the same as I would any other animal.
What was this one called?
I didn't name her, to be honest. I never had a name.
What do you remember happening next? Well, how was that gall treated?
Well, you had a medical man there, vet, and he deals with all these sort of things. But this was when we were in action. But I haven't said when we moved up there. We moved up into Burma.
Can you tell me about that, please?
We went up on the railway. I think the place up to Dimapur, where we, on the way up, we had to come off of one line onto a narrow gauge line. I think it was called Dimapur. Where we went on to Imphal. And that was when we started to get into action. And it was the first time I'd come up against enemy fire. And yes, it was scary. It was the first initial experience you had of what I call war. And it's nerve-wracking to start with.
What kind of fire was it?
This was the first time I come under with artillery fire. And I was frightened at the time. But after a time, you get used to it. We had to keep walking, and sometimes you'd advance with the unit you were with into attack. Once the position had been taken, the muleteers perhaps would have to go back and pick up some more kit, which could be double the journey of some of the other people. Sometimes you didn't make it back in time to be with your unit, and you'd have to pull in the jungle somewhere. One particular point I can remember, it was getting dark, and we couldn't get back to the battalion, but we had to creep our way through, and we came up against the Gurkhas, and we stopped with them for the night. And made our way back to the battalion in the next day.
What were the Gurkhas like?
Wonderful boys. Wonderful.
In what sense?
They treated you, and if you had a Gurkha with anywhere near you, you never wanted to feel afraid, because they stick by you, thick or thin. Was it?
What was the terrain like around Imphal?
To be honest, I can't remember all the terrain that was there. Some of it was flat. We had a lot of rivers and that to cross different places. You'd be wet. You dry out in the sunlight, and that was how you carried on, day after day, day after day. You just grinned and bared it. So
what was the battalion doing at the time?
Well, the battalion was advancing all the time, wherever we could.
Were you happy with the Welsh Regiment?
Yes, yes. Oh, I definitely was happy with the regiment. No problem at all.
Do you remember which NCO was in charge of you?
There was Sergeant Gannon. The Corporal Bryant, but being a muleteer, you didn't stay together. You were told which company to go with. You didn't always keep together. Perhaps they'd say two mules go with A company, and perhaps you'd go out on a recce or a patrol to find out what enemy positions were. I can remember going out on one patrol and we couldn't get back to the battalion in time, so we pulled off the track we were at and we weren't too far off the track and we heard a rumbling noise coming down the track, and this was a column of Japs. And I had the mule there, I was stood, and I was stroking the mule's nostrils all the time they were going by. We were on a section, more or less, and we couldn't afford to make a noise because they were rumbling by for quite some time. There was a load of them, Japanese. They didn't know we were just off the track, but we couldn't afford to attack or anything. But we had that information that we could take back what went through. And lucky, the mule never made a noise to give away our position. And those are the sort of circumstances you were in at times.
Were the mules able to make noises?
Oh yes, they could make noises, yeah. But it was just, you just treated them and tried to keep them quiet all the time. You know, I'm going to say, when you were in a position like that. I know after we crossed the Chinwin, and then we went down and we crossed over to the Irrawaddy, the Irrawaddy River, and just afterwards we moved forward and then we were pinned. We were cut off, more or less. And we were there quite some time and we were getting shelled. We lost a lot of the battalion, killed, wounded, and the mules. It was a sad time, very sad.
Why was that?
They were hit, killed with the shelling. The sergeant had to shoot some of them where they were badly wounded. And my animal that I had was all right. And we dragged them out of the perimeter, out one side. Because you get dead mules, you get the smell and that from them. So we had to drag them out. And we piled them best we could, well outside the perimeter. And we used, the boys, they had phosphorus grenades. They covered them with, like, parachute, the parachute covering. And we set light to that. And as soon as we did, the order was, get back in your bunkers. There were slit trenches that we made. Because, and that was the reason that they pulled them out the line, because the Japs would spot the smoke. And sure enough, they shelled. They shelled the position. But had we had done it inside our perimeter, we would have caught it. He had this gun. They sent a spotter plane up to try and locate it. It couldn't. When we discovered afterwards, this gun was on a rail into the hill. And he used to bring it out, fire it, and then run it back in under the hill again. Eventually, they got it. But we were cut off quite a number of days. But in that time that we were cut off, I used to go about every third day to a forward company that we used to take up supplies to and come back. We used the same track, but every third day, roughly the same time, and I could never understand it, and I still can't to this day, why we weren't attacked. Because the battalion was pinned, and yet we moved forward, and every time we went and got to this forward company, you get sniped at, rifle sniping. We were lucky, I never got hit, nor did the animal there. But then the Gurkhas come and got us out. They were the lads that come to our rescue and got us out. And that's the best I can mind of that incident. Another incident, I wouldn't say this is in, what I'm telling you is in order of the march ahead. As it's coming to my mind, it's not, if you can understand, A, B, C, D. These are incidents that happened during that fighting campaign. Another time, we'd stopped in a group. We'd had something out of our mess tins, food of description. And the Japanese had a gun that would go bang, bang. And the second bang, as quick as that, the shell was there. It was very, very quick. The first bang was like it was fired. The second bang, it had arrived. And it was done like split second. It was that quick. Well, just afterwards, I had a man, in fact, used to live in the next road to me. He was in my platoon, Wesley Towers. He used to live here in Parkston. And he was in with the animal transport with me. And I was told to saddle my mule by the sergeant. He said, saddle up, Knappen. You're off. I said, sorry, sergeant. And this is where it comes in about the girth goal. I said, I cannot go. I said, my animal's got a girth goal. His orders were, take Towers's animal. So I went across to my mate, well, mates, we were all mates. And I said, Wesley, I've had orders to take your animal. All right, he said, look after him, won't you? I said, I will. I saddled up, loaded up, and we pulled out. and I can see it now. We had packets of biscuits in a white wrapper, and they were four biscuits. They were like rock, hard as bullets. Any rate, I was eating one of these on the march with a mule on my right, and we went out like this village, and we come to an open patch, a wide open patch, like paddy fields, but wide open. And the order came, open order, to a pepper box formation. That means to say that you are scattered. You're not in a line, you're not close, you've got the distance apart. We were walking across, watching out. In the distance, there was like a copse. And it seemed that the Burmese were coming out from the right to the left. And we were well and truly spread out, aiming towards this village. And the next thing I knew was a mortar bomb from the Japanese. It landed, I suppose, maybe 50, 75 yards away in front. And the bang went off. I turned to the left, and the next thing was a machine gun opened up. Well, I'm sorry to say, the mule caught it. He caught the full blast of the machine gun. And the next thing I saw was the mule just gave one, and blood shot out of his nose. He went down. I went down behind him, using like that what there was for cover. And the officer shouted out, "Are you all right?" I said, "Sir." He said, "Get the hell out of here." And that was when your training came in. You crawled away. You got up and run. And as soon as I got up, right, another burst of machine gun, but it missed. I was down to the ground again. And I really scared. But there was no way you could fire back because you were in open ground and he had you pinned. And we pulled back. I lost all my kit, everything, because you take it with you. And I went back to Westing. I said, "I'm sorry. Your mule's gone." And what happened to it, I do not know. You couldn't stop there. You were continuously, he trained the gun on you. I never went into the village. I don't know what happened, to be honest. That incident, I do know. And it really shook me, and really, I was trembling with fear. These are incidents that happen, but the same as I said, they're not in order, maybe as I tell them, that it happened. And these sort of things happen quite often. You be out, you stop out sometimes, use cover in the jungle. We were in another place when the Japanese were on the retreat, and you could see them actually running from right to left, and you just had to stop them. There was no other way. It's not a nice thing to think about. It was a job that had to be done.
Stop them how?
Well, you use your rifles.
How many of them?
Oh, we were told there were hundreds of them, but how many, I wouldn't like to put a figure on it. There definitely was quite a lot of them running, retreating.
What was done with the bodies?
That I couldn't tell you, because we never, when I moved into Burma at the first beginning, there was dead Japs. You could see them on the ground from the previous battle. But what happened to them, I do not know. I've no idea.
Was anything found on the bodies?
I never found anything. In fact, I never touched them, to be honest.
Why did you not touch them?
Well, to me, they were gone, and that was it. That was the finish of them. I had no interest of taking anything from them. They would have killed me or killed any of us if they had the chance. They were a terrible enemy. Fighters, they were good fighters, but the type of man they are, they had no respect, not to my way of thinking, they had no respect for human personnel or whatsoever. As people have said, they bayonet him, they're captured. I remember three Japanese that came, we captured, and we were only private soldiers, but as soon as you capture them, they come by and they bow to you, as soon as they were captured. But if they had you, I don't think you'd come out alive, because that was their... Yes, you'd be their prisoner, but I don't think you'd have lived. They'd have bayoneted you, they'd have done anything. It was the type of personnel they were.
How were these Japanese prisoners treated?
That I couldn't say. I'm sorry to say I couldn't say, because I don't know. You saw them like just the same as I've said. You just saw the odd three come in, and they were took away somewhere, perhaps for interrogation or something. I don't know. I never saw anybody harm them, not as such. I never saw anything like that.
What condition were they in?
A bit shattered, shall we say. They were a bit worse for wear, like.
You mean exhausted?
Well, yes, in some cases. But they do anything. They used to try and draw your fire at night by calling out to you and all this sort of thing. But you never had to take the bait.
What would they call out?
Well, they'd call out Tommy or, you know, and all this business. And we used to put tins around, perhaps around the perimeter, and they'd rattle it. But the main thing, what they were trying to do, they were trying to draw your fire, so they'd know what exact position you were in. But you never did. But that one time when we lost a lot of mules, it was a... And we lost a lot of battalion. I saw them come there. They hadn't been there very long. One particular lad, I don't think he ever saw the enemy, and he was gone. I never want to see anything like it again. And I hope nobody else does, to be honest.
So this was to shell fire?
Pardon?
So the losses were to shell fire?
Well, yes. I'm going to say, I had a man that lived here in Parkston, Richmond Road, by the name of Ernie Plummer. He went out, I didn't see this, but he went out, and there were five of them, crossed the track, and he got wounded. He had a bullet just below the heart. Lucky, he lived. he has since passed away, years like afterwards, but he was a good mate of mine. I've still got a photograph of him, always will have it. There's one or two. We did stick together.